We have new microphones, so we have to remember to turn them on. The call the meeting to order, and the commission members and the voting members, and we will have just a second here. Ms. Rainey, Mr. Joya, Mr. Creeley, Mr. Currier, Mr. Risley, and Mr. Wood, and the chair. And do we have report items? That's right.
Who else?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Planning Commission members. Nice to see you all. It seems like it's been a long time. I don't know why that is, but it's good to see all of you again.
That's because you tell us you're so busy.
Well, you know, I'll get to that. I want to go through the BOCC action report first, and I have a few other things on the list here. You should have this in your passageways backup material, I believe. If I could get the overhead, please. So I'm going to start with the easy ones first, and then we'll get to the more detailed ones, perhaps. Sterling Ranch, the final plat for filing number one. Planning Commission approved that 7-0. That was continued to a... I believe to a date certain. The issue there was one of the neighbors who lives across Vollmer. If you remember, Sterling Ranch is basically Vollmer, Black Forest area. Mm-hmm. One of the neighbors lives on the other side, which would be the west side of Vollmer. The plans for Sterling Ranch showed a detention pond on his property. He took exception to that, as maybe most of us would. They did not, however, have the easement for that pond. And so the proposed drainage solution really wasn't fully in place given that information. Board of County Commissioners did not feel comfortable approving a plan that showed that on their on the neighbor's property, or relying on the applicant to somehow modify the drainage plan to accommodate all of it on their own property. I think there was an interest by the landowner to negotiate for an easement, to give them an easement. So what the board did is they kind of kicked it back to the developer and that adjoining property owner, said, why don't you guys try to figure out an easement and come back. So once that gets resolved, it'll go back to the board. I don't anticipate that there'll be any other issues. That was the single issue that they talked about. If you recall, we brought a proposed code amendment to add agritainment as a use in the land development code. You all approved it 6-0, made a recommendation for approval 6-0. That was simply continued because of a scheduling issue. The Board of County Commissioners had other items that they had to get to that day. That ended up on a fairly long agenda, unfortunately. And so we just continued to a date certain to avoid having to repost and notice all that. So that'll be heard by them on August 8th. Probably the most interesting one, certainly that we've seen in a while with the board, was the map amendment, otherwise known as rezoning, for the Bluegill Industrial. If you recall, this is to the west of Meadow Lake Airport. That was a rezone to from residential to I-3. I think some of the hang-up, perhaps, for the Board of County Commissioners was what I-3 brings with it. It's not like PUD where you pick your specific uses and you're limited to that moving forward. When you do a straight rezoning to one of the we call them traditional zones, that comes with the bucket of uses that the code identifies for that zoning. And given that this area was predominantly residential, the board, certain members were very outspoken about their taking exception to the bucket of uses that came with that I-3 zoning. I think they also felt like the specific use was not compatible with the residential uses in the area. They did recognize the industrial zoning on the other side of Highway 24, but from what I heard, it sounded like they were creating a distinction, that 24 is kind of the dividing line between where industrial should be, that being on the what would be the northwest side of Highway 24, and where residential and maybe some low-intensity commercial uses associated with the airport should be located. Ultimately, there was a motion for denial, and that motion was approved 5-0, which was unanimous.
I'm sorry. Craig, is that one the one that was the recycling?
That was the heavy equipment sales. And by virtue of the use type that heavy equipment sales falls under the code, it also by association includes rental and things like that. You know, there's really no way to kind of piece that out if you go straight zoning. Now obviously they could come back, they could request a variance that would be specific to that use as proposed. That's not what they chose to do the first time. Certainly they had the option. So, you know, it got denied, and it was, I think it was, when it was all said and done, it was a use-to-use compatibility issue, not only with the airport, but with the residential in the area. And, you know, by association, that bucket of uses that comes with that I-3 zoning. I thought that was a very astute observation by some of the newer members of the board. We have members of the board who've been on the board for 6 months now. So, you know, in some ways it was encouraging to hear those types of conversations when that's what we do every day. You know, whether or not that was the right decision, certainly that was their decision. But they identified some issues there, and I think that's the process working itself out. So that one was denied. One other item, we had a work session, which I believe a couple of you attended, on tiny houses and what the direction would be from the board in terms of addressing tiny houses specifically in the land development code. If you recall, I think we've even had some discussions with you all by virtue of a variance of use that came to the Planning Commission some months ago. The land development code does not specifically address tiny houses. The problem with tiny houses and using the term tiny houses is that not everybody has the same opinion of what a tiny house is. I think certainly what I heard from the Board of County Commissioners, which I echo, is that a tiny house is a mobile dwelling. It's on a trailer. It's something you can move around. A house that is permanently affixed to the land is nothing more than a dwelling. It's what we deal with on a daily basis. I think the ultimate outcome of that work session is that, you know, we were very candid with the board in identifying that, look, something that comes in from out of state, we're talking about interstate movement here, something out of state, out of county, it's problematic because it's constructed somewhere else and then could be moved into the state and more particularly El Paso County. And that's challenging from a permitting standpoint, whether or not it's a quality structure, whether or not it's not going to burn down or flood or whatever the case may be. So I think the board understood that anything that is coming in that's prefab, it's pre-made by, let's say, a certified builder somewhere, we have some here, there's some out of state as well, would need to get some kind of certification either at the federal level or at the very least at the state level. So that I think the board understands that maybe there's something, a cause there that they're going to have to champion with state legislature to get those prefab, those pre-built ones that are built by reputable builders, not just you and I sitting in our backyard building something on a trailer. So they understand that that's one of the topics. That's one of the areas of tiny houses that we can't really deal with at the land use level in terms of zoning. And regional building does not have the authority to inspect them at their level. That's something that is wholly reserved at the state level. So that's one of the areas of kind of how a tiny house can come in. One of the other areas is, like I said, the more mobile, you know, a dwelling on a structure. Their direction to staff was, we think these are perfect for RV parks. so long as they are built to an RV standard. So there would be certification that would need to be done on those structures, basically to call them an RV. And so the board said we shouldn't distinguish between an RV and a tiny home built to an RV standard. Matter of fact, we think they should go into RV parks. We're seeing evidence of that up in Teller County, other areas of the state, where a lot of the what would be traditionally known as RV parks are actually transitioning away from RVs and kind of becoming tiny home communities. And so they see it as kind of a neighborhood of tiny homes. It's not, they're not on their own land, they're renting a space, but there may be a pedestal for their hookups. So their feeling was, as long as it's built to an RV standard and certified as such, and Regional Building could inspect the connections to that pedestal, they think they should go into RV parks. So that'll be our direction moving forward in terms of drafting or redrafting some of the sections of the code to accommodate that. That's the easy low-hanging fruit to pick off. Then there's a middle category. So you have the state level type stuff, and you have the RV certification to go into RV parks. The middle one is when you have a mobile tiny home, like an RV, but they want to put it into what is otherwise a single family neighborhood. This might be your RR5 zoning, it might be RR2.5, whatever the case may be. It's on a single family zoned lot. The board was not interested in seeing RVs as permanent residents on those types of lots, but they are okay with attractive or single family looking tiny homes that are skirted and have an appearance of being a single family home. So that'll be some of the heavy lifting on staff's end, is figuring out how to get that as the final product or what the applicant actually proposes. So we're going to have to work through some architectural standards, so to speak, to make sure that people aren't just putting a roof on an RV and calling it a single family home, or a tiny home in this case. So that'll be we'll have to do some brain damage on that to get to the point where we feel comfortable that, you know, if an RV comes in, we can distinguish between that and what is an acceptable tiny house in those single family zoning districts. And really what I heard was they wanted those only in the rural areas of the county. And in and of itself, that kind of creates an issue, because what is rural? You know, a lot of people think that Black Forest is rural, but when you have a half acre lot, I'm not so sure that's very rural. So there's challenges in legislating that at our level to make sure that what you're intending is what you actually get. So we'll be working on that. We are at a point where we have full release of our EDARP system, which is our Electronic Development Application Review Program. I think Mark kind of talked you through that last time. We did do a presentation to the Board of County Commissioners. There's actually a video out there. Some ugly guy is talking on it, which was me. Kind of introducing it and the value of it. There was a write-up in the Gazette as well about it. So what we can do now is all of our archives are available online to anybody in the public. Immediately, they can search projects. They can look at active review projects, things that are getting ready to be heard by you all and by the Board of County Commissioners. We have never had that. And I can't stress how important I think that is in terms of transparency of government to be able to provide that to our citizens. Where we're at now in terms of ongoing efforts, all of our over-the-counter applications, which are like driveways and residential site plans and sidewalk inspections and decks and stuff like that, we're working on that platform now to be able to accept those electronically. So where we're moving is basically everything that comes in could come in electronically. Cuts down on paper, cuts down on the time needed to review and process. So it's a very exciting time. We also want to use the same system for our code enforcement officers. My goal is to create an app for them that they can use out in the field to take pictures, upload those pictures, and automatically goes in the archives of EDARP so that the public can see that there is an active code enforcement action against their neighbor's property that they've been complaining about forever. We also want to use it for our inspections group so that they can go out and create a punch list by taking pictures and hopefully using GPS to identify where the issues are. So that's the stuff that's in the works over the next year or so. I think it's a very exciting time to be a part of the department because we're getting to do things that we've kind of dreamed about for a while, but we actually have the ability to do it now. It's a very exciting time. Let's see, what else? Oh, you mentioned the new microphones. Those are just a part of the overall upgrades that you will see in this hearing room. I don't know if I've discussed it before. If you've been to a Board of County Commissioner hearing recently, you will notice that down on the floor by the dais, they have a rather large TV, and on that TV is scrolling the review criteria for all land use applications. So the applicable land use application that's being heard at the time, the review criteria is scrolling on that screen. And the idea is to keep the discussion focused on those criteria, because that's the basis for the board's action, either to approve or deny. With that in mind, the plan is to have two monitors up here mounted up above so that the folks in the audience at your hearings will see the same thing. To again try to focus that conversation towards the review criteria. We're also going to upgrade the camera. I don't think you have the upgraded monitors yet, but you will. So in the feed, if you've ever watched these meetings as part of the outside world, the feed is standard definition. They're upgrading all of that to high definition. Things that we've been needing for a while. They're going to be removing some of the speakers because it's creating interference with the microphones. A lot of stuff just to clean up how what we do gets produced and how you all interact with the folks up here at the podium. So exciting time. It's nice to kind of see those facelifts occur. They're all good things. I want to move on to your consent calendar today. You have two consent items, which would be the minutes from June 20th, as well as item 2B, which is a preliminary plan for Meadowbrook Crossing. I made a note here that to remind you that we need a recommendation for water sufficiency finding on item 2B when you do make that motion. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr.
Yes.
I have one on the Sterling Ranch. You talked about the detention pond, and I don't recall that discussion coming up in ours. How did we overlook that, or how did that not come up?
You know, the detention pond was shown in the construction drawings. It wasn't shown in the plat. You all don't see the construction drawings, and neither do the Board of County Commissioners. That's an administratively approved document approved by the county engineer. And a lot of times those are still in development at the time we get to hearing. We're comfortable enough with them to agendize the item, but maybe there's still some fine tuning that needs to be done between when we agendize it and ultimately when the plat gets recorded. The reason why it didn't come up at the Planning Commission is because the neighbor didn't show up at your hearing. The neighbor only showed up at the Board of County Commissioner hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have two questions. One is the city going to EDARP? Will they be?
You know, there are a lot of days where I wish I could speak for the city. today, I'm going to choose not to.
Okay.
I can't speak to that. I will tell you that we did do a demo with our counterparts, and by that I mean the planning director as well as the public works director. Their level of interest or whether they were impressed by it or not, I can't speak to. I know that the industry is very complimentary of the program. I think particularly a lot of the consulting engineers, the access to information that we've afforded them now saves them an incredible amount of time. Whether the city will do it, I don't know. I've heard rumors that certain jurisdictions are interested. You know, when you deal with a system like this, you have to have a lot of volume. You know, some of the smaller jurisdictions, it may not make sense for them to have something like this because they don't have the volume that we have to really justify it. It's not as much of a time savings as it would be to us in the city. We'll see what happens. You know, I want to get everything done on our end first before anything happens for any other jurisdiction. You know, because as a reminder, we're working with Regional Building on it. I mean, it's their IT guy who's basically creating this system. It's not something off the shelf. We built it from scratch. We built it to work for El Paso County, but frankly, I think it could work for any jurisdiction. I would like to see the other jurisdictions use it, not for my own interest, but because I think it's the right thing to do for the industry. I think it's the right thing to do for the mom and pops, even, that come in and want to do a kennel or want to do a minor subdivision, because it's easy to use. It's what I think it's very intuitive. So I'd like to see it as a regional solution, but you know, there's a lot of things I'd like to see done, and I don't always get my way. So,
the second question was, there was a big meeting having to do with water, fountain water, and is there anything learned from that big meeting that took place that we should be sort of knowledge of? Or?
You know, I didn't attend that, but from what I hear, you know, the Air Force is still really kind of non-committal, which is unfortunate. I think... you know, and this kind of ties into what we're doing with the countywide water master plan, which I'll provide you an update on that. I do know that a lot of those districts in the south end of the county have dealt with the issue, some at their own expense, unfortunately. Some have shut in wells and are using other wells that are not contaminated. So it's created a hardship for sure for them. Now, whether, you know, what the ultimate outcome is in terms of any remedy or any mitigation provided by the Air Force probably is only for them to know at this point. On the topic of the county water master plan, if you recall, the plan is to make that part of the county's overall master plan, which is a statutory term of art. We have offered the contract to a consultant. We will be agendizing the contract with the Board of County Commissioners next Tuesday. It's very exciting for me. It's kind of been, you know, not a long time coming, but you know, nothing ever seems to move very fast, unfortunately. So we have hired a contractor who is very familiar, has done other plans in the region for other water providers. Obviously, we're not a water provider, but we're kind of the underlying land use authority that affects all those water providers. So we hope to kick that off next week if the contract gets approved by the Board of County Commissioners. That proposal actually came in on budget. We didn't have to expand what the budget was for that plan. So we're on track to get it started this month, or I guess it's now this month, it's August. So any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
Okay, thank you all.
Before we go further, we'll deal with the minutes from the last meeting, which was the 20th of June. Anybody have any corrections? Has everybody had a chance to read through the minutes? Any changes? Hearing none, the minutes will be deemed approved as presented. And now we come to the first the consent item of SP 17002. Did anyone have any questions or issues about that?
That was one.
Just you have, Mr. Curry?
Oh, mine is just a quick administrative thing. The letter that we received, has that been entered into the record? Is that that's on this one, right? Meadowbrook?
Oh, it was about water, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that has been entered into the record?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to have this pulled off of the consent calendar? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and with it as a consent item, and the chair will entertain a motion.
Chair?
Yes.
I do have some questions.
Okay. Go ahead and ask them.
Some are probably for staff, but they may be for the applicant. I noticed in the staff package that this falls under two different metro districts. I just want to make sure that I think I saw that the residents are only going to pay to Meadowbrook. Are they only going to pay to one, or are they going to pay to both of them? That was on page previous page 9, I'll figure out.
Good morning, Carrie Parsons with Planning and Community Development. The Cherokee Metropolitan District is the district that will provide water and wastewater services. So that district will remain, and then the Meadowbrook Metropolitan District will be constructing the improvements to the Sand Creek Channel, as well as the ownership and maintenance of the tracks that are going to be the buffer and the landscape within that buffer. So there will be two districts. Now, at the final plat, there is the option to have a third district, as you know, for the traffic impact fee or the public improvement district.
Okay. And then the second question for staff is, I noticed that there's a, in the letter of intent, there's a description of a deviation request relative to a centerline tangent on a road. Is that an issue for the county, or do we care?
No, sir. That has been resolved by the county engineer. It is approved.
All done?
Okay. Correct.
And I have one question for the applicant. I noticed that there's a note in the staff package that the applicant intends to file for an increase in the mill levy cap from 35 to 50. I certainly don't generally considerably or favorably consider those requests. I don't know how I would rule in any, I mean, I don't know how I'd vote in any individual case without hearing the evidence, but generally speaking, I don't like those kinds of things. If that mill levy increase cap was to be denied, what impact, if any, would that have on your application and your ability to carry out the rest of the development?
We'll proceed. As we've furthered our entitlements on this and actually generated our construction estimates, the channel is about 40% more expensive to channelize riprap two-drop structures than we originally estimated. The builder who will be purchasing these lots recognizes the extraordinary development cost for this particular subdivision. It doesn't have enough scale with 114 lots to absorb $1.2 million channel improvement alone. So for that reason, they're on board with a higher mill levy for the district, and that's enabling us to keep the lot prices down to the consumer. So it's just a matter of sort of spreading some of the development cost over time. And we will be in front of you with the amended service plan request.
With respect, I understand the rationale for why you would like to have it happen. I'm asking what impact it will have if that's not approved.
Well, I think at this point, it's a good question. We're going to move forward with a lower mill levy that we've already obtained your approval for. What we're going to respectfully request your reconsideration as we can unveil the particular economics of why we're coming back. But to answer your question, we're going to go forward. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be more expensive if we're unsuccessful. It will. And so we think we have good criteria for your reconsideration on the amended service plan. It'll be coming to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could you state your name for the record?
Sorry.
And sign in, please?
Sorry, Danny Mienka with the Equity Group.
Thank you. I get yelled at if we don't get that done. And occasionally I remember I don't like to be yelled at.
I should know better. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, I had one more follow-up for you, sir.
Go ahead, Mr. Curry.
I'm here.
I noticed that there was also an intent to file for annexation into a public improvement district. That's an additional 10 mil levy. And that seems like a... What I'm a little bit concerned about is that there are a whole lot of what-ifs here relative to getting more money back. And what impact, if any, would it have if that application for annexation in the public improvement district was disapproved? Maybe that one's
Gary?
For staff. Sorry about that.
The public improvement district is one of the options an applicant has at the final plat to participate, which is a required participation in the traffic improvement fee program, resolution 16454. There is no plat that can be approved at this point in time that can get out of that fee program. So your question as to how does this impact his development, it has no impact to his development outside of the same impact to other plat applications.
I got
got. This is something that's sort of imposed rather than an application.
Right. So okay.
All right.
Either the lot owner would be subject to pay, for example, roughly $3,900 at the building permit, or if they go into the public improvement district, they have the ability to pay, say, $600, roughly $609 at the building permit. And so there's not as much cost to the homeowner initially.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really am done now.
The question I have is, we're dealing here with a preliminary plan, and does the issue of the mill levy come up for us to deal with at preliminary plan time?
No, sir, it does not. And I don't believe that the mill levy would be part of the criteria for approval at the final plat stage either.
Okay.
Separate application, independent of the final plat.
Just one observation I have, it's not really a question, but a comment, that you wanted to go ahead with the grading to put in the wet utilities. And I can understand that, obviously, that if we get to final plat and there's some problems with the final plat, you may have some of them in the wrong location, but I'm sure you understand that and it planned accordingly. That's all I had.
Do you want me to respond to that?
Thank you, pardon. Yeah.
Did you want me to? So we actually have reviewed the final plat and the preliminary plan together. However, staff did not feel that the final plat was quite ready to present to you. We are writing the staff reports now, and it should be available for your decision at the next planning commission. So we're pretty sure where those utilities are going in, and we're confident in that.
Thank you. Anybody else? Then I will entertain a motion. Yes, Mr. Creeley.
Mr. Chairman, concerning item 2B, SFP 17-002, the preliminary plan for Meadowbrook Crossing, 5 conditions and 2 notations, I move for approval towards with page 25 with a finding of water quantity, quality, and dependability.
Second.
And Mr. Risley has second. And any discussion? Then I will, for item 2B, file number SP 17-002, preliminary plan, Meadowbrook Crossing, with 5 notations and 5 conditions and 2 notations. The motion has been made and seconded for approval according to page 25 of the new standard resolution page. And with that, does anybody have any further comments before we vote? Then we'll go ahead and do the voting. Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
And Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Okay, and the chair votes aye. So the motion is approved unanimously with 7 votes. Thank you. We'll now move on to our first regular item 3. And are we all ready to go on that?
Nina Reese with Planning and Community Development. I understand that we're having some technical difficulties, so we're not able to use the PowerPoint, so we are going to use the overhead instead. So hopefully that'll work for you guys. So I'm here for the Rockwood Minor Subdivision. This is a request to subdivide a piece of property into 3 separate parcels. Associated with that request is a waiver of the Land Development Code requiring frontage onto a county roadway, specifically section 8.4.3D5. So on the overhead, I'm going to have the approval criteria for Cole Emmons to cover.
Cole M. Senior Assistant County Attorney, and I am not going to read all of these. Like zoning, in which you have considerable discretion in making your decisions, this is a subdivision action, and you have less discretion in making decisions, particularly if there's an inclination to deny. In other words, if the applicant meets all of the technical requirements set forth in the Land Development Code, you cannot deny it unless there is some issue of safety that has not been addressed. So looking at the criteria here in front of you, just briefly, what the applicant has to comply with is we always look at conformance with the master plan, and that the subdivision plan that is submitted is in conformity with that plan, that it is in conformance with the design standards set forth in the Land Development Code. Water supply is sufficient. In this case, it is a minor subdivision with three lots. For minor subdivisions, which are four lots or less, there is a presumption of water quality. So we're only looking at the findings for sufficiency on quantity and dependability, and the recommendation is for a finding of sufficiency on the water. Area that there's adequate public sewage system, that adequate drainage has been provided, that legal access is provided, that the subdivision is compatible with the various requirements in the code with regards to traffic, pedestrian traffic, and that the necessary public services, particularly fire service, has been provided. So those are the criteria in a nutshell.
Thank you. So now I will put the plat on the overhead, and the owner will give you a brief presentation, and then I'll come up for the staff presentation.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Curtis Rockwood.
Have you signed in, sir? If
no.
You would, I'd appreciate it. Could you repeat your last name for me?
Rockwood.
And the first name is?
Curtis.
Curtis. Thank you, sir.
So what I'm trying to do here is we're dividing this lot into three lots, and we intend for myself, my family, and friend to build our dream homes on the properties. Most likely where the houses will go, one of them, my house, I've already began construction on, is going right here. And then the other house will go here for the person that buys that. And then this lower lot, we have not, I haven't sold any of the lots, but I've offered that lot to any of the neighbors that are interested in purchasing it so that they could put what they want there. In a nutshell, that's basically what we're trying to do. We're doing everything we can to create a great neighborhood. We're building nice, expensive houses up there. We intend to make it a beautiful place that and get along with all of our neighbors and all that kind of stuff.
There was one lot that is not quite 5 acres. Which one is that? And you received an administrative approval for that?
Yeah, so this lot right here is not a full 5 acres. And part of the reason is because we've given up this land here for a right-of-way. And that road, because of the topography, it's not feasible to move it to make the bottom lot 5 acres because it's way too steep. That's the reason why we did that.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Mr. Greeley. Curry, I'm sorry.
Thank you. One of our approval criteria deals with preservation of wetlands and wildlife corridors and those sorts of things, and I noticed in our staff report that the area in general has been designated as something that's having high wildlife potential. Are you doing anything in here to mitigate any impact on wildlife or maintain migration corridors, all those kinds of things?
It's our intention to leave everything as is, to be as low impact as possible. I mean, part of the reason that we like it up there is because of it backs up to national forest. You know, we want to see the deer and the everything just as much as anyone does.
But I can imagine that fencing that is associated with the housing and those kinds of things might reroute. Is there any impact that you're aware of?
When I purchased the lot, the entire lot has a fence around it. That was existing. I don't know how long it's been there, for years. I have no idea. So we don't intend on adding more fences at all. We planned on leaving everything as is.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So.
Mr. Risley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand you to say just a minute ago that you've started construction on a house on a portion of the property?
Yeah, so my house, I'm building up here, which we started, basically it's whether we get the subdivision or not, we're still going to live there.
So this might be a question for staff, but how, I'm assuming you have a building permit for that project? So how would subdivision of property where there's an active building permit already in play, how would that be impacted, or how would that work? Again, that's probably a question for staff. Are you going to address that when you? Okay, thanks.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Rock?
Yes.
Ms. Rainey.
Good morning. I can tell from the packet online or on this overhead, but you have an area in this, the southwest lot to be subdivided, where you have all this hash marking. What does that represent?
It's just really steep.
It's really topography.
Steep. Yeah, it's that I think they labeled it as like a no build area. It's just really, really steep.
Yeah, and we just can't see that. So I didn't know for sure.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
thank
that's
you.
A no build drainage, really steep area.
Thank you. Any other further questions? Thank you very much. We'll hear from staff. Next.
Nina Reese again with Planning and Community Development. So first I'll answer the questions that I heard come up, and then I'll give an overview of the area essentially. So for the question first about the environmental concerns, so whenever somebody is going through a plat, we're required to send the application to various agencies. So we did send the application to the our environmental services, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because they're adjacent to the National Forest, we also sent it over to the National Forest. And we haven't received anything from any of the agencies that would be concerned with the environmental impact to say that this subdivision is going to cause an issue. And then for your question about the building permit, so when the building permit was issued, it was issued based on the large parcel as it stands today. And when that approval was done for the building permit, the lot line, so for the setbacks and everything, it was based on the larger parcel, but at the same time, we reviewed based on their proposed subdivision to ensure that they won't be creating a nonconformity by subdividing the property. So this is something that if they are making a request for a building permit, we're able to still approve their building permit even if there's a subdivision that's ongoing. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. I mean, obviously, that's kind of getting the cart before the horse. Typically,
absolutely.
A subdivision needs to be created prior, and legal descriptions, obviously, created prior to the issuance of a building permit. So mm-hmm. I was just kind of curious what the administrative mechanisms are there.
The applicant chose to move forward with the building permit, just like he said he would choose to build on this lot, whether it were subdivided or not. So whether he continues to own all of the acreage or if it gets sold in the future. So that's why we moved forward with it.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to kind of give you an overview.
I just got a note that said we needed to take a break to fix some IT issues.
Oh, okay.
And how long a break is needed? Is Nancy about 5 minutes? We'll take a 5 minute break, and as soon as we find out the IT,
we already rolling.
What
are we already rolling?
We're rolling
on the record. Okay, so Nina Reese again with Planning and Community Development. It looks like we are working now, so I'll actually be able to show you guys some stuff. So let me just kind of start from the beginning. So here's the property right here located. Where it says site. So it's located southwest of Highway 105 and then just adjacent to the Red Rock Reserve subdivision. And then also on the west side is the Pike National Forest. The surrounding zone districts, we've got RR 2.5 to the east, and then just partially adjacent to the property on the most southern southeastern side is RR.5, and then RR5 to the north and A5 to the west, which is again the Pike National Forest. So the applicants are requesting a minor subdivision to create three parcels, one of 29 acres, and that's the parcel that's located next to Pike National Forest, one that is 5 acres. That's lot two, and then one that is 4.5 acres, and that's lot three. So that's the lot that they've received administrative relief for their lot size. The Land Development Code does give the director the ability to approve a decrease in lot size up to 20% with neighbor notifications. And so they went through that whole process with separate neighbor notifications and a separate application for the administrative relief, and that request has been approved. So now Tommy will give you an engineering overview.
Good morning, Commissioners. Tommy Hoff, Engineer 1 with Planning and Community Development. So the site is located outside of the floodplain, which is great. For drainage and erosion, it is located within the Raspberry Mountain Drainage Basin, which is an unstudied basin, so it doesn't have a DBPS. Or a drainage basin planning study. The fees were calculated at 0.41 acres of impervious area, and Raspberry Mountain charges $3,665 per impervious acre. So the calculated fee is gonna be $1,503 for the drainage fees. There will be no bridge fees associated with this basin, which is great. And then in conclusion, no public drainage improvements will be required. For the transportation, a traffic impact study was not required just because the properties won't generate more than 100 people per day versus what they would be anticipated to generate without the development. And then for the roadway, they will be dedicating a little bit over a quarter mile of lane miles, which will be dedicated to the county. And that is it for engineering.
Any questions? Thank you.
As mentioned before, along with the request, they're requesting a waiver of 8.4.3D5 of the Land Development Code. So Tommy just explained that they are dedicating right-of-way to the county, but we are not requiring improvements of that roadway, just the dedication. So the Land Development Code defines a public road as a road located in a public right-of-way or easement and open to the public for travel and accepted for maintenance by El Paso County. So because they aren't upgrading the road to meet county standards, it won't be accepted for maintenance. So although they're dedicating, we still have to technically do the waiver request.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just a question on that point. Would there ever be anything in the future that would trigger the need for improvement of that roadway and future acceptance by the county?
There definitely could be. So there are several parcels further to the north that are large. So if those parcels were to ever subdivide in the future, then maybe the traffic counts would warrant that roadway being improved. But with this being a three-lot minor subdivision, we didn't feel that it was equitable to require them to bring that road up to county standards.
So if there were something that triggered that need in the future, would it, whose responsibility would it be? Would it be the county's, or would it be the developer who triggers the need, or?
You know, I don't think that we could really answer that question today without knowing what the future subdivision might look like.
The reason I ask is I'm just kind of curious about where the burden might lie in the future.
Uh-huh.
So in that scenario, Craig Dossie.
Thank you.
Planning Community Development. In that scenario, there is always the opportunity for cost recovery. And it's the classic problem of you kind of have the nickel and dime effect of subdivision along a roadway, and then the last guy at the end tips it over the need to improve the road, and now all of a sudden the burden's on him. He can go back and see cost recovery against all those other people who benefited from him having to improve the road or her having to improve the road. So it just depends on the level of development, like Nina said, as to whether or not it's going to be required in the future. If there's another road that they can access from, it may not even include needing to improve this road. But there is always an opportunity for cost recovery. So it's problematic. There's no perfect way to deal with that scenario because, you know, if you have people collateralize that, you may be holding on to that for 30 years. And every year you have to get that renewed, that collateral. So it's not really, there's no perfect way to deal with it, but cost recovery under the Land Development Code affords an opportunity to at least recover some of that money.
Thank you.
Question I have for you, Craig. So this is essentially a dirt, unmaintained road?
You're asking the planner an engineering question. I mean, it's...
Well, I thought maybe I'd get lucky.
Not today.
No, sir. The road is paved currently.
It's paved?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The developer at the end paved it by himself, and then with this new development that's coming in, then we'd be dedicating it to the county, as we said.
Okay. Thank you.
And not to step on Nina's toes here, but what she was referring to is whether or not it's there's a nexus there for us to ask for the road to be built to the county standard. And in this case, with the paved road, the cost of the developer to extend it for his three lots would far outweigh the benefit of subdivision. You know, if he were developing 10 lots or 50 lots, that's different. That's a different conversation. And we deal with this a lot where we have kind of these rural plats that aren't creating that many lots. You know, we can't ask for, you know, if we have a major arterial that's planned to go through there, we can't ask them to dedicate 100 and whatever feet for the major arterial. We may ask for them to reserve that right-of-way that we'd have to acquire in the future, maybe at the county's expense. But these are the negotiations, these are the discussions we have to have with them, because it's not always equitable to get the biggest and best, you know, what we need in 30 years or 50 years. We can't treat people that way, and frankly, if they challenged it legally, we would lose. So we have to make sure that whatever we're asking for is equitable with the impact that they're creating.
Thank you. Did you get your question answered?
Yes, I did.
Any other questions? Thank you.
11 adjacent property owners were notified of the request, and we haven't received any responses to date. Very early on in the process, I did receive several phone calls from adjacent property owners that had concerns, mainly having to do with the roadway and if the roadway was going to be built at this time. But we haven't received anything since then, and I understand that the property owner has talked with all of those concerned neighbors and worked out all of the issues.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Joy.
I just have a quick question, and this is it's a curiosity to me, the exception parcel in there. What is that, and is there any interaction with that at all in this process?
So that exception parcel is for a water tank, and that was approved in, I put a little note here in case the question came up, 1972 with a special use. So that is just for the water district. So they own that property, and that was created a long time ago. The water district will also be providing water to this proposed subdivision.
And they've been talked to about this, and there's no problem from them at all?
Yes. Before the applicant can even make a subdivision application, whether it's a minor subdivision or a final plat, right, we actually require them to give us a letter of commitment from the district saying that they will serve it. So they are very aware.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
At this point in time, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this? Sure. Please come on up, sign in, and give your name.
Good morning. My name is Sean Garrett. I'm the my wife and I own Lot 8 in Red Rock Reserve, so we're directly adjacent to one of the parcels on the proposed subdivision. I don't know that you asked if there's anybody in favor of it. I'm not in favor or opposed to the subdivision, quite honestly. I do have two concerns, and I don't know what the best way to show you on the map is.
You
might have to have Nina help me with that.
Computer, you can probably bring the mouse around, right?
Yeah, so I own this lot right here, Lot 8. This is the proposed 4.5 acre zone. In our current subdivision, this entire area where this yellow line goes through and probably about 50 feet on either side is a no-build area due to drainage. I have not seen anything on the plat. The natural drainage continues, it's hard to see on the satellite, but it does continue through this 4.5 acre lot. I have not seen anything on the plats that dedicate that as a no-build area to continue the natural drainage. So that's my first concern. If there's nothing restricting building right there, you know, if they put a building or a road across or something that would divert the water out of that natural drainage area, that's a concern to our entire neighborhood. My second concern is of a personal nature, and I'm just like Mr. Rockwood. My wife and I bought this lot about 7 years ago, planning to build our dream home up there. When she retired from the Air Force, which she's about to do next fall or next spring. We had our plans done, and we were ready to break ground in March, right after I started receiving the certified letters about this subdivision. The way our house is supposed to be situated, it's right up here, and it's supposed to face Raspberry Mountain. Unobstructed, spectacular views of Raspberry Mountain right out of our great room. There's an area on this proposed 4.5 acres, and it's probably only about, I've not measured it by any means, just looking, comparing the whole size, it's probably about 1/2 acre, 3/4 acre at most, to the south side of that natural drainage area. If someone were to put a house right there, they would essentially build right in my backyard, and instead of seeing Raspberry Mountain, I would see their home. So I don't know the means or if this is even the right forum for this, but I'm requesting that be designated as a no-build area on that 4.5 acres. So they would basically have that drainage area and that 1/2 acre-ish to the south of that would be a no-build area. So they still have probably, in my estimation, a full 3.5 acres of very buildable land on the north side of that natural drainage area. So that's my only reason for being here.
We'll have the applicant address that when it comes up for his rebuttal period. In general, people don't own views.
I understand.
But lots of times people like to cooperate in a way to make everyone happy. So.
That's exactly what I said when we started this whole process is, I don't have a right to object to the subdivision. I don't, it meets those criteria. I don't have anything on that.
You have every right to object.
Well, but when we bought this lot, we knew that 40 acres was there. There was a big for sale sign. We knew it was there. And the natural place to put a house is exactly where he is putting his. Off Redstone Ridge, there was already a road going up there. There's a nice plateau, beautiful, beautiful place to build a home. That was the natural place. And we never envisioned that anybody would even think of putting a home down lower, let alone the subdivision. It just never even occurred to us. And that's probably our naivety, you know, so that's on me. But, yeah, the best in my mind, you know, to protect our, you know, that vision we had, if we could just get that one little no-build area. And we're not asking for much, I don't believe, because I do believe that that drainage area needs to be designated no-build anyway, just to protect that drainage. Otherwise, we could have a lot of problems out there with the snow melt.
Any questions for Mr. Garrett? Yes.
I just wanted to make sure I understood. You indicated you thought there was a drainage easement that runs along.
No, it was a no-build area through our entire development, Red Rock Reserve, and it kind of runs along this yellow line. It's hard to see from the satellite, but it's a great big drainage gully. I mean, it's probably 30 feet from my level part of my lot down to the bottom of that, and you do see it's wet most of the year. And that's where you can kind of see, this isn't the best satellite shot to see it, but some of the more recent ones, you can see there's a lot of trees right there because they're getting all the water, and there's not a lot of trees on the rest of it. And that's just the natural drainage coming off the mountains there. And so I'm just afraid if somebody does build across that drainage area above us, that it could divert the water and into people's homes down below.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there anybody else in the audience who would like to speak in favor or opposed? Hearing none, Mr. Rockwood, would you like to come forward and
all right,
address any issues that have been raised?
Yeah, so I guess I'll address a few of them. In regards to the drainage he's referring to, according to all of our studies and the people that we had certified, there's nothing significant there, according to them. In regards to if somebody was to build there, diverting water, obviously steps would be taken to avoid that. I'm assuming even in the building department, like, they wouldn't allow, you know, some type of a situation like that to occur. And so I don't know how better to respond to that other than I don't think it'll be a problem, and it can't be a problem, you know, when it comes time to build. In terms of the obstructing the view and all that kind of thing, I would like to do everything I can to make it a good environment for everybody so everybody can have their dream home. Which is partly why I've offered to sell that lot to whoever would like to buy it. Then they can do what they want with it at a reasonable price, too. I don't know what more I can say. I'd like to do what I can to make that a great situation. So I have met with all the neighbors, or all of them that would meet or whatever, adjacent neighbors, to discuss what we can do to make things a good situation. I think I've gone above and beyond to try to do that, and right, I will continue to do that. So
it's my understanding that no one has put their hand up yet to say we would like that lot. Is that true?
Sean was initially interested, but I guess it's not in his finances. Okay. He told me today.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Rockwood has been outstanding through the whole process dealing with the neighbors. There were some concerns early on. We all got together, had a big meeting, so there are no issues with that. Yes, he has offered it to us at a very reasonable price.
Okay.
We would love to do that. I should probably be out working a second job if I want to do it, though, instead of being here. it's just, you know, it's a personal situation now, whether we invest more in land and shrink our house plans down. And we're still trying to come to terms with that.
Okay.
You know, like I said, in Sean's perfect world, if that's just a no-build site, then I can build my house as is, and we can sell it to somebody else and get another great neighbor out there. But
we can ask staff about no-build sites. I'm not aware that we do that kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
Was there anything else you wanted to say, Mr.?
No. I think that was it.
Thank you very much.
Nina Reese with Planning and Community Development. We did ask the same question as the neighbor is asking about the no-build early on, and their surveyor as well as their engineer re-looked at the studies to verify that there's not a need for this area to be no-build based on slopes exceeding 30% or drainage concerns. There's not a need based on that. Now, that the applicant absolutely could choose to add an additional no-build area and an additional note on the plat if he wants to preserve his neighbor's view corridor. That's always an option. But I'm sure you're very well aware that we don't preserve views or see that as something that... You should look out for denying an application.
Does the county not preserve views, but if a property owner has his property, they're not required to restrict his use of his property by establishing no builds.
He would not be required to do so. Mm-hmm. He could do so if he would like to. So he could amend his proposed minor subdivision to add that in if he chose to do so.
But it is entirely his option.
Correct.
Thank you. Any other questions about this?
Just a follow-on question as it relates to drainage. Typically, the county requires a easement around the perimeter of lots for public utility and drainage and so forth. Lot 8 that was just being discussed, do you know if there were perimeter easements required for drainage?
You know, it's been a while since I've looked at that plat, so I couldn't say for sure that you are correct. That's a standard. I know what he was saying as far as there being a no-build area due to drainage concerns. That is shown on the adjacent plat. But we don't really know how detailed they got with their study. I've seen plenty of instances where there's a huge no-build shown on a plat, but when they go back and do a lot-specific analysis, some of that no-build area, or maybe all of it, could be eliminated. We're looking at the proposed subdivision and their existing studies that are currently in place.
I understand that. I'm just thinking that if there was a drainage easement that's part of Lot 8 that would correspond with this natural drainage feature extending to the west, if there wouldn't be some rationale for requiring a drainage easement as an extension of that.
If you would like to take a little break, I can look up the plat in just a few minutes, and we can see if that's the case or not, if you think that's important.
If my fellow commissioners would indulge me, I'd be curious. The reason that I'm curious about it is if you look at the shape of Lot 8 and why the kind of the southwest lot line tilts to the north, I'm just curious if that corresponds with that natural drainage pattern.
We've been in session now for a little over an hour. I think it'd be good to take a 10-minute break.
Okay. can zoom in right here.
Oh, yeah. That's us.
Okay, so first I'm just going to show you the note related to the no-build area, and then I'll show you the actual no-build area shown on the plat. So it says these areas are shown in an approximate manner to indicate where the existing slopes may be greater than 30%. And then you can read the rest of it. And then the very last sentence there, the certification hereon does not apply as to the accuracy or completeness of this information. And then, sorry, can we zoom out again? All right, that's good. Thank you. So, Mr. Rockwood's property is here. And then this is the no-build area that they are talking about. So absolutely, as I remembered, the adjacent property does show that there's a no-build area due to slope and drainage. Yeah. But we know that when they do these reports, it's very general. And I've seen plenty of instances where a plat, just like this one, will show no-build, but then when they do a lot-specific study, with that lot-specific study, they're able to remove a portion or potentially all of that no-build because it's very general. Elizabeth Nykam, our engineering supervisor, looked at the associated drainage report related to this plat, and she's going to give you some information based on that.
That'd be wonderful. Always nice to have Elizabeth here.
Good morning, and congratulations on your mother's birthday.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Egbert. This is the adjacent drainage.
The reference is my mother had a 100th birthday on July 22nd, and the Board of County Commissioners were kind enough to issue a proclamation.
My name's Elizabeth Nykamp, and I'm the Engineering Review Manager. This is the adjacent subdivision's drainage report, and if we could have somebody pan into here or zoom into here. Perfect, thank you. Okay, so lot 8 is the lot in question to the adjacent property of the Rockwood property. And you can clearly see that they've proposed a 25-foot drainage easement within the drainage report, and you can see where the flow goes. They've actually even drawn the bottom of the low flow right here. It doesn't appear to me as if they've actually constructed something there when they started the adjacent subdivision, but it does look like there's a defined low spot on it. On the westerly side, on the Rockwood property, it does appear that there's a low spot here. This doesn't appear as pronounced as a crevasse. I did call the engineer, Mr. Rockwood's engineer, before I ran back up here. My apologies for being late. And he said that he did not even see the swale, that it's so low, that it's so shallow on the street side, and that the water pretty much sheet flows over this makeshift driveway / road that goes up through the property. So if we were to go back out there and take a look, and we certainly can, there'd be a chance that we'd want to evaluate this area right here for a no-build area, but that's, I don't know that it's that significant at this point with the engineer telling me that it's very flat, but I would not be adverse to taking a look at that to see if it needs a no-build area zone mapped on it.
Okay, so you can create a no-build area, or how do you?
I would have to defer to Nina to help me with that.
Okay. I'm getting educated here.
So am I.
So it would only be if it was determined that this is a hazardous area due to drainage or slopes exceeding 30% that we would have them indicate this as a no build. So unless that is the case, we wouldn't have them put it as a no build.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thanks. just want to go back to the original concern, which kind of raises, which is if somebody attempted to build in a specific location, concern about the drainage and the water that would be diverted or changed or rerouted or something like that. Is it safe to assume, and I think it is, but please confirm, that when the building permit was filed, that the engineers would look at those kinds of things, and should there be such drainage issues, there would be conditions or requirements for routing so as not to have those kinds of problems?
That's probably the case. I don't issue building permits. We only do the site plan review. But if when they're preparing their documents for Pikes Peak Regional Building, if there's a concern with the proposed location related to their foundation, then maybe they would choose to move it to another location. They're also going to be on septic, so associated with that septic permit is an additional soils report that's different than the soils report that was prepared for this minor subdivision, so that would be another look at the soils in the specific area.
I'm just saying part of that application process involves engineering reviews for things like transportation, I mean, drainage, those kinds of things are generally involved in applications like that?
Not with our department, no. And it would only be, so they're only required by our department to have an engineered foundation if it's specifically included as a plat note. I am no expert in Pikes Peak Regional Buildings process, but no one in our department and no engineer in our department would be reviewing the site-specific location for a proposed home, if that's what you're asking.
Thank you.
Now, we're here for a subdivision. Will there follow on a plat?
With the minor subdivision, you complete the preliminary plan and final plat in one action. So this would be the only time that you would be seeing this request unless somebody chooses to come through and further subdivide the lots.
Okay, thank you. That was what I thought. So this is it. This is the last stop. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Any comments from Mr. Lockwood?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to reiterate that I am interested in working with Sean to create, you know, something that doesn't impact him negatively. And I also agree with Nina. I don't believe that there's a significant potential drainage problem in that area. So I guess that's all my comments.
Okay, well, that's good. We sort of have the world's body of knowledge here right now, so.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have a question for the applicant.
Okay.
Would you be willing to entertain a condition of approval that speaks to the potential drainage considerations that we were just discussing relative to the adjacent Lot 8?
So to put in some type of conditional if there's a issue or something like that?
So, yes, with this item, there are 11 conditions and one notation that would be attached to the approval if we were to move forward with such. And so I'm just curious if you'd be open to a 12th condition that would somehow capture potential concerns relative to
Yeah, drainage. I'm open to those things. My approach has been, like, in terms of the bottom or eastern side section is I'm reluctant to just add a whole bunch of no build for this and that just because the value of the property will go down, especially if it's not necessary. And so in that way, like, I'm open to doing anything that's necessary and called for. I definitely want to do. If something is not necessary and just as a precautionary measure, I'm more reluctant just because, you know, I don't want the value of the property to go down because there's, you know, things like that. So that's kind of how I feel about it.
Speaking just as myself,
Mr. Chair,
I'm very reluctant to diminish property owner's value unless we have an awfully good reason. So,
agreed.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Green.
With deference to Mr. Garrett's desires, I really think we've got the cart before the horse, and we're not talking about what a future owner may or may not do, and when they do, they're going to have to deal with the drainage. And I think this encumbers the current owner in his ability to sell the property. And so I think we've got the cart before the horse with worrying about the drainage in an effort to try to accommodate Mr. Garrett, and we do try to do that, but I think it in this case that may work its way out when the owner decides to start to build. And so I think we need to stick to the issue, which is, do we subdivide or not? And Mr. Garrett, please try to understand. I appreciate you coming and what you had to say, and I think, you know, you make valid points as an adjacent landowner. But to try to deal with that today is, I think, not appropriate.
The only reason that I'm raising this as an issue is that one of the approval criteria specifically says all areas of the proposed subdivision which may involve soil or topographical conditions presenting hazards or requiring special precautions have been identified, and that proposed subdivision is compatible with such conditions. And so that's my only issue, is that if there is a drainage, a identified drainage area to that's adjacent to this proposed subdivision, as we know, stormwater doesn't just stop at a legal boundary. And so I just want to make sure that we understand that this is or is not in compliance with the approval criteria.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I don't think that I was very clear, so I'm going to try to maybe state this a little more clearly now. So we specifically asked their engineer, Jonathan Moore, about this location, knowing that the adjacent property had no build. We specifically asked him, should this be shown as a no build area for the same reasons as the adjacent subdivision has it shown as no build? And we were told no. As I said before, when they're doing subdivisions, they do a very general study. So the area that was included in the adjacent subdivision, the acreage was much greater. So they probably weren't able to get down to the specifics that they were able to with this minor subdivision because it's a smaller acreage that they're dealing with. We do also have a signed drainage report signed by the county engineer saying that there aren't any drainage concerns with the proposed minor subdivision as well. So I just wanted to clarify all of that because I don't think that I was very clear previously, so I apologize for that.
Well, that's fine. I think that's helpful, and we have a parliamentary process we can follow because once we get a motion on the table, people can choose to determine whether they want to make an amendment to that, and we can vote on the amendment and then vote on the main motion. So
thank you.
Is there any more information people feel they need? Yes. I think you have low volume over there, Cole.
He didn't.
It's the button issue. Cole M., Senior Assistant County Attorney. I'm concerned if there is an inclination to impose a condition like Mr. Risley is contemplating without any evidence in the record that there is a hazard, that the drainage rises to a hazardous condition, or that the slopes are greater than 30%.
And I certainly accept that. I don't want to make a bigger issue out of something than needs to be. However, we did hear testimony from an adjoining property owner about a drainage concern. So understanding that I assume you're not a civil engineer, nor am I. So if we've got evidence on the record from the engineer and responsible parties in question here, I'm certainly not going to, again, make a bigger issue out of it. I just wanted to make sure that we fully vetted this issue.
Thank you. Any other comments on this? Any other questions on this? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Yes, Mr. Joya.
In regards, regular item number 3, MS-17-002, minor subdivision of the Rockwood minor subdivision, I propose, or I move for approval on a new standard resolution, page 19, with 11 conditions, one notation, with a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Rainey has made the second. And is there any discussion now that we have a motion on the floor? Yes, Mr. Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm inclined to agree with my colleagues here. I didn't previously have all the concerns, and I understand the drainage, and I think that I'm comfortable that the process will take care of itself. And relative to the drainage issue, I'm comfortable that will happen, and like my colleagues, I am reluctant to encumber a current or a future homeowner relative to what they may or may not do, because I don't want to speculate on that kind of thing. I think there would be sufficient opportunity at the appropriate phase in the process for the appropriate people to make those kinds of decisions. Relative to the view issue, as sensitive as I am to that, that legally your right to a view ends with your property line. And there are a number of things you can do to secure that, provided you have the financial means or not. But I would not be inclined to put any no-build zones or any of those kinds of other encumbrances for those kinds of reasons. And in my view, I commend the applicant for his proactive work with the neighbors. I think you've done what is reasonably expected, and appear to be working within the process, and I would be inclined to vote for the.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, then we have a motion on the table. Regular item number 3, MS-17-002, a minor subdivision of Rockwood Minor Subdivision with 11 conditions and one notation. And the motion has been made to approve with new standard resolution page 19 for sufficiency and quality, quantity, and for water, and dependability for water. So that is the motion. Any issues before we vote? Not. Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Joya?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
And Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Okay. And the chair votes aye, so the motion is approved unanimously, 7-0. And thank you all very much. Are we going to have another commission meeting?
Hello.
This month?
There will be no hearing on August 15th. We haven't set the agenda for the hearings in September yet, so. I do know that we have a lot of projects in review. I didn't present it at the beginning, but June was the highest June month we've had in recent years in terms of type C and D, which are the ones involved, the planners and the engineers. So I keep telling you there's a lot of stuff in the works. We're in one of these weird cycles where everything comes in for re-review all together. So what that means for you is you're probably going to have either no agenda or fairly long agendas. We're in one of those weird funks. So I would anticipate at least one hearing in September.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We are adjourned.